Welcome to the Lost Traveler podcast. I am your ever-loving host, Henry Cameron Allen. And today I have a special guest joining me, Colin Kingsmill, who is a coach. He is a guide. He is an author, a budding author. And he's fearless. And I'm so grateful to meet another fearless person on the planet. Welcome, Colin.
Hey, thanks. It's good to be here. We have to... The fearless tribe has to come together, I think. And
Well, I want to start the conversation with something that I've started doing this season, where the previous co-host in the previous episode has asked a question of my next co-host. And so,
oh, very cool. Okay.
This is a question that is for you specifically. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the episode, I'm going to ask you, just don't want to, you know, catch you off guard. I'm going to ask you to ask a question to the next host. Okay. And I think this one is a great way actually to launch this conversation about fearlessness, about, you know, your journey and
where
you are. The question is, what passion or skill can you give to change the next generation for the better, to change the world for the next generation?
So I think for me, what I'm trying to do is kind of fourfold, right? If we want to change the world, we've got to start with ourselves, right? So if you're talking about climate change, talk about this climate, talk about this microclimate, right? So for me, the first thing is, you know, let's rediscover our common humanity, right? I think we live in an era where we have become so disconnected from who we really are, right? And with that disconnection and through that disconnection, we can allow sort of atrocities around the world and around the corner and around our neighborhood happen, right? So I think that's the first thing we have to do is like, come on back to humanity, recognize that we're on a tiny little rock spinning at 1600 kilometers an hour through the galaxy, right? The second thing is, I think for me, it's turn it all off and forget what you've learned. And what I mean by that is, you know, turn off the news cycle, turn off negativity, turn off toxicity, because we get so much of it bombarded towards us every day, right? So for me, it's remember who you are, turn off the taps of negativity, you know, the 24-hour news cycle, consuming news at 11 p.m. before you go to bed, all of these things. And then I think the third thing is, you know, become responsible, and remember who you are. Remember why you're here. You know, what is your purpose? What are you going to do to make a change? What are you going to do to make an impact? So I think for me, it's those sort of three pillars, if you want. Start with yourself, discover your humanity, and I think the other point maybe is to live in integrity and so purpose and integrity, I think, are super important, especially for guys, but you know, for everybody, but because we live in a world where not obligated to, but we're conditioned to put on a mask, right? And not be our authentic selves. And that shows up in a myriad of ways, right? It can show up as you being a people pleaser, or as you saying yes all the time, or as you not being able to set boundaries, or having, you know, difficult times in social situations in the office. The not living in integrity manifests itself in a whole bunch of coping mechanisms. So I think, yeah, those would probably be my four my 4-point plan for to answer that question.
The four-legged stool. Yes. I think you're right. Yeah, exactly. And my life path has totally given me those gifts from a very early age as well. Where were your foundations in all of this?
Well, that's interesting, right? Because I don't think I got any of those foundations at an early age.
Right.
I might have subliminally, but I certainly grew up. The first part of my life, I certainly grew up with all of those societal pressures of you have to be this, you have to have this, you have to, you know. I think what I was doing was compensating for this sort of core wound of unworthiness, right? Which I shamelessly borrow from Ajashanti, right? Like the teacher, it's like I didn't feel whole as a young adult, and therefore the first part of my life was all about chasing those dreams, right? Mm-hmm. And I had to hit a very hard wall at about 35 when I got it all. I ticked every single box that I had thought I needed to achieve and have and be and do and vacation here and blah, 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 and all that stuff, right? And I was just completely empty, depressed, soulless individual, right? So my learning happened way later in life, after an early midlife crisis, really. And that's why, and then I spent about 20 years, you know, working and loving it, and but still not totally 100% embodying that sense of self and that sense of self-worth and that sense of being home and free and sort of free from psychological suffering and everything like that. And finally living in my integrity. But it took almost like two very sort of key important intersections in my life. And the second one was only about a year and a half ago. So,
oh, wow. So what were those pivotal intersections, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, well, the first one at 35, I was, you know, working so hard to attain these things and to have these things and to be that person, right? You know, Christmas in St. Moritz and Easter in Saint-Tropez kind of bullshit. And friends around me recognized that I was exhausted, that I was stressed out, that I was going to have some kind of heart attack because I was just like flying around Europe, drumming up business. By then I had set up a business with some partners. So I was very much in entrepreneurial and growth mode. And I had, my friend brought me to something called rebirthing, and I had that past life regression moment where it was supposed to be a breathing exercise to reduce my stress levels. And all of a sudden I saw all of these stories with me in it. And I thought, over sort of an hour, and I described them all and she wrote them all down. And at that moment I thought, wow, you know what? I don't have to really do all this stuff this time around. The pressure valve just seemed to burst, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, the judgment of who I am and what I'm doing is not going to be by the, you know, being whatever I wanted to be by the time I was 65 or whatever, right? It was, I felt as though the timeline just instantly expanded, almost sort of to infinity. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I don't have to rush this, do I? And I don't have to be doing this, and I don't have to be proving. So it was like a floodgate of I don't want to call it spiritual awakening, but just sort of a moment of enlightenment, whatever it was, that's just said, oh, okay, well, and I changed everything. I moved back to Canada. I was living in Europe, and I gave everything away that I owned, every sort of piece of evidence of that past life. So I gave watches to my cleaning lady and piles of Italian clothing to my friends and drove my cars back to the garage. I mean, I just complete sort of Buddhist cleanse.
Shadow and Light LLC was established by Dave Roberts and Reverend Patty Farino, co-authors of When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. Their mission is to empower individuals to transcend life's challenges by integrating spiritual practices with psychology to achieve peace. They are available for individualized spiritual counseling, virtual or in-person book club meetings, or presentations and workshops to universities, organizations, and other interested groups. For further information, visit psychologyprofessorandminister.com.
And then I got into destinations and real estate and tourism and hospitality and building things and resorts and places. And I love placemaking, right? I love looking at a place and a destination and see how it can live organically better, you know, I'm kind of like the interface between a developer and humanity, right? Like, so the developers are just got their Excel spreadsheets in their heads, and I've got, well, how is this going to look and feel and breathe and walk and all that stuff. Anyway, I've been doing that for 20 years and have loved it. And but there was always something. I'm like, I'm not quite there. Not quite. This isn't quite right. I was given a gift last year of letters from my mother to her best friend when I was a child. And they weren't intended for me. Obviously, they were from my mom to her best friend when I was, six, seven, eight sort of thing. And I had a moment of remembering my early childhood development and all of the things, call them small T traumas, all of the things that made me look at life through lens of lack, right? And through lens of insufficiency. And whether that was financial or personal or psychological, it was just, I wasn't full, right? So I had to battle to, go to Switzerland, get my MBA, get into the largest bank in Switzerland, all those things. So I have to do all this stuff. And I realized in that moment really that I hadn't addressed the childhood trauma stuff. So I was still seeing life through the lenses of, lack or financial instability, or I'm not good enough, or I have to prove something, or I have to be, always the nice guy and always say yes and all that stuff. So I was like it was like being hit by a bus, right? It's like, oh wow, holy cow. But this time around, after having sort of spent years reading every self-help book imaginable and diving into all sorts of things, this time around it was like, okay, now I recognize that. I know what that is. Let's clean it out. Let's have an exorcism. So I did a little bit of therapeutic work, did a little bit of coaching work, did a little bit of exercise work, meditation, sound baths, that kind of stuff. And now I'm flying like a bird, really. I feel lighter, certainly, than I have in years, right? But it took big moments, right? Big moments of shift. And so what I'm doing now today with my coaching and any sort of strategic advisory that I do is I'm really trying to help people get to this place of, freedom, psychological freedom or bliss or fearlessness. It's all kind of connected, right?
Right.
To get there faster than I did. So that's why I'm doing podcasts like yours, right? It's like, let's spread the message of it doesn't have to be like this. It doesn't have to take you a lifetime. You don't have to have sort of two midlife crises to get to this point. That's it. Sorry, did I answer your question?
Yes, no, that's great. And it really, goes back into why I started this podcast, because I've been for years working with universal life skills and trying to get that conversation and that lens to be recognized. Everybody who is either a parent or in the parenting generation is, but especially parents of children. Do you have kids, by the way?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I mean, but you are of the parenting generation. Anyone who's over 13 pretty much has younger eyes upon them for how to be in the world. And yet parents are solely responsible for imparting essential life skills to their children, while most parents I know, myself included, are deficient in very key places and should not, absolutely should not be teaching these deficiencies, passing these deficiencies on to children.
Right.
And most educational systems today do not have essential universal life skills as a conversation or as a study.
Oh, I know.
Universities do not have universal life skills as a conversation, as a study. And just to be clear about what I mean by that.
Yeah.
There are 8 billion people on the planet today, plus.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Every single one of us, in one measure or another, is learning the same skills and applying them daily.
Sure.
Things like communication skills, emotional literacy, financial literacy, environmental literacy, sexual literacy, hygiene, grieving, these are things that we all experience, every single one of us. So it's not a question of whether we are learning them. We are learning them, whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not, the lessons that we're learning.
Yeah.
But the question is, how well are we learning these skills? At what proficiency and from whom?
Oh.
And what was their proficiency? So I am identifying, yourself included, experts in their field globally who have a perspective. Obviously, no one is proficient in every life skill.
Sure.
But we do have, each of us, our own level of proficiency. And I want to have real conversations that are understandable by lay people all over the world, no matter their culture, no matter their religion, no matter their socioeconomic status, to say, here are some practical tools, right? You can't use our tools the way we use them because they're ours and we have cultivated them over a lifetime, right?
Yes.
But what you can do by our laying our tools out freely is to say, okay, this tool looks interesting. Let me synthesize that with the tool I already have and create a unique tool for my life, right? I was very fortunate in my foundation years to have grown up all over the world. My father was a cultural diplomat for the U.S. government, the USIA, which no longer exists because their mission was accomplished. It was the propaganda wing of the U.S. government in the 60s and 70s. Right. And they basically took all the appropriated culture that America has and is and wrapped it up in a shiny red, white, and blue ribbon and sold it back to the world as American. And we did it better than you. So to have grown up surrounded by the parade of the human condition across my threshold daily. Was such a gift. And I think that's what gave me perhaps a different perspective. And the privilege of having grown up that way has given me a bit of a different perspective on these things. And those pivotal points, I can identify every single one of them that has led me to this conversation.
Sure, sure.
Right? They're so important to reflect on.
I totally agree. And I was speaking with somebody recently exactly about these subjects, right? It's like, why isn't this stuff taught in school, right? Even just grief, right? I was speaking as a grief specialist a couple of weeks ago, and it's like this stuff should be taught, right? I've got coaching clients that are going through this that need, they need attention, right, placed on that life skill.
Immediate.
And there's 50 of them that we don't get taught, right? And I don't know. I don't know about you, but I find it so frustrating how, people are coming out of these places, out of universities and out of schools without the skill sets, right? Even just like basic geography, basic economics, basic
reading,
geopolitical, understanding of what's going on in the world, as opposed to, this sort of fast food junk consumption of the headline and then not understanding whatever the depth is of the subject matter. It's just tokenism, it seems today, that's getting paraded around.
Are you tired of feeling run down? Do you wish there was a natural, non-invasive, drug-free way to improve your overall health and well-being? If so, then let me introduce you to the Super Patch Company. Super Patches are a range of small neurotech patches that can help with a variety of issues, including sleep, immunity, pain mitigation, athletic performance, focus, anxiety, and stress. They're safe for everyone to use, and they're backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Order your Super Patches today. Now available in the EU, UK, Turkey, Canada, and the US. If you're ready to take control of your health, you can find out more online at dianedinkmeyer.superpatch.com. Super Patches. There's a patch for that. Well, there is no depth to it. That's the whole thing. When you're reliant upon YouTube and TikTok and, you know, all the other, I mean, there is no living energy. It is a synthesized, dead interaction. It's just spoon feeding sugar. And what that does is when you have a bowl of sugar and you torch it, you know, you have instant creme brulee. I mean, it burns fast and we want to consume more. And it's, you know, like sugar, which is 8 times more addictive than cocaine. And I think really the bane of our human mental health.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. My gosh, you could go down that path all day long.
Well, let's do it. I mean, that's what these conversations are about, is to say and reflect back, you know, getting back to grief for a second.
Yeah.
Fear and fearlessness. I think you'll appreciate this story. 15 years ago, my son transitioned from brain cancer when he was 13 years old. He was diagnosed at 11, lived with it 2 years. I was a single father. He was my only child. So talk about an existential crisis and pivotal point in my
development.
But what's interesting is several years after that, my father sent me a packet. He saved every homework assignment, test, exam, and I don't know why, but he kept them in the bowels of his files for years. And this was after Cameron passed, and I received this in the mail, and within all those papers, I found this one assignment from when I was in second grade. You talked about having those trigger memories of your foundation years. Well, this was a big one for me, because I remembered it after seeing it again. Like your letters, I remembered it so clearly. Mm. My second grade teacher, this was at the international school in Vienna. Her name was Mrs. Fend, which I love because it's like, fend for yourself, you know?
Yeah, no
kidding. And she gave us this assignment to go home and write a paragraph on your greatest fear. And I remember sitting at my desk in front of an empty sheet of paper, thinking to myself, why would a teacher, or any grown-up for that matter, ask a child to meditate on their fear? Now, I wasn't a fearful kid. I wasn't afraid of monsters under the bed or afraid of the dark or
right.
snakes or bugs or abduction or anything like that. I was pretty fearless as a kid, but I had to fulfill the assignment that was given to me.
Interesting. Okay.
And so the only thing I could think of at 8 years old was outliving my children. Call it a premonition. Call it a cosmic awakening. I don't know. But that was the only fear that I could identify foundationally through my childhood, through my entire adolescence. And then when I became a father, it was like, whoa, you know, and being a single father, it really was potent until I got to the other side of it. And if there's a gift in that experience, I hesitate to call it loss. I'm trying to change the language around it because I know exactly where he is. I didn't lose him.
Right.
But he has passed. He's transitioned. We know that it's all frequency. It's all energy that just transmutes. It changes form. So it's up to me to figure out and discover what form he's in now. And I feel it. I feel him. Right. So
I'm sure you do.
But what that transition, his transition and my own, gave me was the gift of walking this earth at this time, physically, fearlessly, utterly fear. I have no fear. I resolved that fear. He resolved that fear for me. And so I keep coming back to as many, as we call them, peregrines. That's a new word that I've coined through my foundation, the Lost Travelers Club, which is a support system for parents who have outlived their kids. It is the journey of the peregrine, and it's the question, why me? Why did this happen to my child? And when there are no answers, right? There's no answer as to why Cameron got a kind of brain cancer that is only found in men over 45 at 11. There are no answers as to why. And the answer really came from him. He said to me once, "Papa, we're all going to go. Nobody knows when, nobody knows how. When it's your time, it's your time. And when it's your way, it's your way. Whether it's a disease or whether it's an accident or whether it's by your own hand, it's your time and your way. And if it was meant to be different, it would be."
Totally.
So what do we do with that? You know, he was pretty enlightened for a kid, but.
It's interesting that you say that, right? Because, you know, kind of goes back to what I was saying before about this timeline, right? That you can't judge this experience in the 10, 20, 30, 40 years in which it happened, I don't think, on this such a short time scale, because you don't know anything. We don't know anything. Nothing. Right? He could have already come back as a nuclear scientist or maybe not Nobel Peace Prize, but like as a change maker, right? And because of the experience that he had with you on this plane, right? So I'm kind of with you about, you know, this, if you stop worrying about this little picture frame that we're in, right, and think of it, you know, pull yourself back, you know, there's those amazing photos, I don't know if you saw them recently, maybe it was the Hubble telescope or some telescope or something.
Oh, the new James Webb.
Webb. I mean, oh my God, you pull back and you know that we're just this tiny little speck over there in the corner.
Less than a speck, half a speck.
It's like get with the program, you know, come on, baby, this is bigger than all of us.
Well, that was an epiphany that I had with Cameron too. It was near the end or the beginning, depending on how you look at it. And he was at a point where he couldn't really do much. And so very often he would just watch, you know, documentaries about space or science or art or history or whatever, things he loved. And I was in the kitchen doing something and I heard the narrator on the television. It was about the solar system and the universe and all that. And the narrator said, "You can fit 14 planet Earths into the North Pole of Saturn." I was like, "What?" And I looked around the corner and there was a graphic of Saturn. And there was another graphic of, boop, 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 you know, 14 little planet Earths crowning Saturn. And then I thought, it's that big? I never thought it's that big. Look at every version of Saturn we've ever seen, whether it's in a book or if it's on the screen or on our mobile. It's look at the scale is way off, right? It's always really? Much okay. smaller than we are. And so I never conceived that compared right. to Earth, it was that much bigger. And then they put Saturn next to Jupiter, and Saturn was dwarfed and you could barely see the Earth. Then they put Jupiter next to the Sun, and Jupiter was dwarfed and you couldn't even see Saturn or the Earth. And then they put the Sun next to the next biggest star, then the next biggest star, all the way up to Betelgeuse, which apparently is about to explode. And do you know how many years it takes to do one orbit around that star, Betelgeuse, in the Orion constellation?
No.
1,500 years to do one orbit. We are so micro, nano, tiny compared to everything in the known universe. I mean, that's just in our solar system, in our galaxy, amongst billions and billions and billions in the known universe, let alone beyond.
Right, right.
You're right. That's to your point, that we are so tiny. Yeah. That we are so minuscule. But what that means in the big picture is that the biggest vision and the biggest dream you could ever dream for your life, for your community, for your country, for your world, is still micro, nano, 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 tiny, and everything is possible. That's what that moment gave me as an epiphany. Sponsorship and listener support of the Lost Traveler podcast benefits the Lost Travelers Club, a volunteer-operated charitable foundation under United Charitable, a 501c3 public charity. Peregrine is the proper noun we now use to describe a parent who endures the loss of their beloved child, forever carrying their memory and embarking on a lifelong journey of grief, resilience, and hope. The Lost Travelers Club provides programs, resources, and empowerment opportunities for peregrines globally who are navigating their grief journey. Parents of child loss, getting there together. You can support this important work by becoming a sponsor of this podcast or visiting www.losttravelers.club for more information or to make a donation. Thanks for listening and for your continued support.
Yeah. I totally agree. I mean, I think I think understanding that positions you with some modesty, right? And some humility, perspective, right? Get a bit of perspective. But then I think you're right, you know, also think of the possibilities, right? I think that's the, you know, what are the possibilities on that little speck? You know, goes back to my answer to your question. You know, it's like, what's your purpose? What are you doing here? What are you gonna just let it ride, which is fine too, I guess. You know, just let it flow by, or are you gonna have fun with it? You know, and play your superpower, you know, play with the universe, play with that vibration, play with that energy, see what happens when you get into that zone, right? As opposed to the other side, which is, you know, coping and depression and alcoholism and all those things that dampen you down energetically. So don't sit around and be a couch potato, I guess.
I learned in fourth grade that we are as perfect as we can be in the moment that we're in.
That's amazing that you learned that.
Well, and it all came out of a moment. And I learned how to recognize moments, the potency of moments. And I think you're right that play also contributes to the concept of fearlessness, to tap into your inner child, maybe who didn't get to play as freely as it needed to, that inner child that is still scared and confused and angry and neglected or whatever, and to tap into that childlike sense of wonder and play and curiosity that lives still within us. My teacher, who's this towering 6 foot tall Scottish woman, Mrs. Ardeline, she had us draw a picture of our house and our family. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I didn't like what I had drawn because I grew up in a violent home. I grew up in a sad and angry home.
Okay.
And it had glimmer moments as well as the trigger moments. But
right.
For the most part, it was not a happy existence. And so okay. I didn't like what I had drawn. It wasn't about the aesthetic of it. It was about the energy of it and the spirit of it, right? And so yes. I pulled it up and I threw it across the room, little storm cloud over my head, and sat there with my cross. And Mrs. Ardeline came up and put her hand on my shoulder. And she said, "Oh, Henry, nobody's perfect." She thought that I was upset with the aesthetic. She didn't assume that it was a deeper trigger.
Right, right, right.
And I looked up at her and I said, "Mrs. Ardeline, how can I be any different than I am right now? Doesn't that mean I'm as perfect as I can be?" And I still hold to that, Colin. I still believe that we are as perfect as we can be in this moment, because everything preceding this moment and everything after this moment only lives in our imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Your feelings are not facts.
Exactly, but we're not taught that. Again, another thing, another life skill that we're not taught is all of these stories and all these narratives in your head are that's all they are, right? And I think, you know, one of the things that I do even with my work is like, let's deconstruct those. Like, let's break all that down, because that's all it is, our stories and ideas and thoughts and dreams, and let's build you another set of stories if you want to make a change. So many people don't recognize that, though, because we're not taught it, right? We're not taught to, you know, mindfulness or meditation or aware self-awareness. It's just, no, we're taught a whole series of other things that I think
how do we, aside from doing the work that you're doing, and aside from me doing the work that I'm doing already and being an example of those things,
yeah,
all we can be, you can lead a horse to water, right? How do you see in our time, using the tools of our time, right? We bitch and complain about technology, and yet it is a very useful tool for paradigm shifting. And how do you feel in our time we can help shift the paradigm out of these things that we are seeing, that we're reflecting right now, the shallowness and the lack of life skills education in the world?
I think I would boil it down to one thing, is become truly aware and become truly informed. And I have these discussions all the time with people and friends and family around everything, right? So you'll have a conversation and somebody will say, "Oh, climate change," right? Okay, well, what did you just say? You know, what do you actually, or, you know, we've been colonized. Okay, let's break that down. What does that actually mean? Or are you just regurgitating a tagline or a headline news thing, right? So I think it's all about, you know, if you want to talk about something, or you want to bitch about it, or you want to scream and shout on social media, let's dive into it. Let's look at the history. Let's look at the geopolitics. Let's not just be so fragrantly, what is it, binary these days. It's like, oh, he's bad and he's, you know, bad guy, good guy, you know.
We always want to point to the villain.
You know, this polarization that is going on, life is much more complex than that. Life is much more nuanced than that. Geopolitics are, history is, all of these. And so I think the awareness, and maybe it goes back to that idea that I answered in the beginning, is stop absorbing the toxicity, right? If you want to dive into something, dive into it, but do it with purpose and intention, and understand all the mechanisms, right? You know, even my dad is like, I don't know if you heard about the trucker convoy in Canada, but it's like, terrorists, right? I'm like, right. No, that's actually not what they were, right? So let's ditch the labels and have a real conversation. That's what I think is the not the number one, but strikes me as kind of the number one thing. There seems to me so many people that are willing to pour fuel on a fire that doesn't need it, right? That doesn't deserve it. So let's talk about, let's get real. So long answer to say awareness and true in-depth understanding and nuanced conversations, as opposed to the popcorn headline news kind of stuff that just gets everybody pissy.
Yeah, and it's what's frustrating to me is that how many thousands, millions of years have humans existed on the planet and we haven't fixed this problem yet? We have every capacity to make these adjustments, but there's nothing new under the sun. These things, these divisions have been happening since the beginning of recorded history and before. So where do we finally evolve? When do we finally evolve?
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I'm Queen Bee Divine. The cure is conversation. And where can you find me? At BluntReflections.com, where I will be talking to guests from around the world that not only share their time, but their insights and their tips on how they became the best version of who they were meant to be. So if you're looking for a great story and a great time, check me out at BluntReflections.com. The cure is conversation. And remember, blasé blasé means to tell your story.
Look, I think again, it's like you say, go back in history and look at the end of empires, right? You
let's go back. Yeah.
Right. All the last five empires all had exactly the same trajectories. The same things mm-hmm. were happening. There were, you know, division between, you know, good, bad, left, right, polarization, income inequality, wealth, the wealth gap, whether it was the French Revolution or the, right, you know, they've all had the same arcs, right? And the
measure.
So, you know, even what we're seeing today around sexuality is at the end of the Roman Empire, at the end of other empires, Greek Empire, masculine, feminine, binary, sexuality began to morph. So we're seeing the same thing today. I think it's again, it's like, know your history. You're right. You are right that this stuff has been happening for millennia. I don't know if any of your viewers have read Sapiens, but we haven't been exactly the nicest things on the planet, right?
Exactly.
To ourselves and to anything else around us. So I suppose it comes back to our individual responsibility, right? What are you doing? What is the, and I use this analogy quite a bit of being, you know, we are radio frequencies, right?
Yes.
So it's like, what radio station do you want to be on today? What frequency are you emitting? What message are you emitting? That's my thing. It's like
the cosmic radio. That's what I talk about it all the time.
Just decide, right?
But we are like, on this. I said it at the beginning. We're on the same frequency. When we first met, I was like, this guy and I speak the same language. This is really important right now. And we're not the only ones, Colin. There are many, yeah. many people, everybody who's tuning in to listen to this conversation is on that frequency. They've turned the dial. Sometimes it's a subtle movement.
Yep.
But the individual is the key. And mm-hmm. the only ones, we are the cosmic radio. We can plug it into the wall, get some juice flowing through it, flip on the machine and start turning the dial. Right.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Well, you're absolutely right.
You know, and that's why I think it's individual responsibility to, you know, wake up, get informed, you know, what is that station you're going to be on? It's your individual responsibility. And, you know, putting toxins in your body is the same as putting them into the planet. You know, it's all connected, I think, right? So wake up, be aware, you know, decide what radio frequency you're on, because it's incredible, right? When you decide to be on a certain vibrational level, and however you do it, whether it's sound baths or whatever, meditation, the day is totally different than, you know, I often say, you know, look up, don't look down, right? And it has a bit of a duality to it, because like by not looking down, I'm also saying get off your phone, right?
Right.
But you know, look up with hope and with aspiration and with possibilities into the lightness, as opposed to looking down into the darkness, right? But I think that's the trick for humanity today, is that individual responsibility. Start with yourself. You know, it's, I think it's kind of, you know, even you see so much activism around these days. It's like, just start with yourself and your neighbors. And I don't think, you know, technology is going to change most things anyway, right? So throwing soup on Van Gogh's or gluing yourself to the sidewalk. I don't know. I don't know if that's high vibrational energy or not. I don't particularly think so, but
yeah.
It's up to each one of us. And you're right, to connect with people that are on that same frequency and to give each other hope, right? I think that's the biggest thing too these days, is often I find myself going, oh wow, and maybe it's because of the algorithms of whatever I read or look at, but it's like some days you're kind of like, this is bleak, man.
It's a hard time.
I need my tribe.
Listen, but this is the story of the human condition. This is the story of the human journey in the physical. I think that, you know, we are always looking for our tribe. We're always looking for comfort. We're looking for safety. We're looking for ease, because how long has humanity been in survival mode? There is an inherent, I mean, epigenetics is showing us that even within our DNA, we carry ancestral memory. That's kind of how I interpret reincarnation, is that it's not necessarily the ego, the individual consciousness, but that we are part of a collective consciousness. We are the universe. Experience itself in the physical. The power of the individual is that it takes the individual human consciousness to imagine all of it, the known and the unknown. When you shed your mortal coil, right, and the shell stops working, and you transform into another state, you become part of the whole, part of the oneness. Again,
right,
made of all the same things as everything else in the universe. We are the universe. And for me, what I have come to, and maybe it's too simplistic, I don't want to judge it, but to me, there are only two frequencies that the human consciousness is comprised of. Love and truth. Everything else is an imposition. And so when I look at the news, when I look at gossip in a community, when I look at all the you shoulds tapes that people are playing in their head, or that are being taught in school, or the brainwashing of education and religion. I know. It's like you start hyperventilating, because it's like there, it's all right there. It's all right in front of you. But if you move it all aside and simply focus on the frequency of love and truth, that is what we are. That is what the universe is, known and unknown. That is what science is. That is what spirituality is. That's all it is love and truth. So start there, is what I say. I think that is, and again, I can't go and proselytize this.
This is my own
journey, my own experience, my own unique perspective. Right. But what I can do is be authentically that, be a reflection. There's a reason that human eyes are set in a way where we can't see our own faces without a mirror. We are meant to be each other's mirror. We are meant, the eyes are the windows of the soul. And so we see ourselves reflected in the eyes of another. That's why I love these conversations. Is that we get to share the common, and find, as you said earlier, the common ground, because it exists. It doesn't matter what your politics, it doesn't matter what your spirituality or faith, doesn't matter your socioeconomic status, there is a common ground amongst all of humanity, and it's universal life skills, love, and truth.
Yeah, no, that's a great way of, that's a really good way of putting it. I don't think I have anything to add to that. I agree.
Well,
I totally agree.
That's great. Thank you. I agree with everything you've said too. I mean, this is one of those great conversations where the frequency matches and everybody gets to hear it and see that it's possible. Here are two people, two beings in the physical on opposite sides of the world. I'm in Spain.
I was going to ask, I kind of thought you might be in Spain. I was like,
I'm in the southwest near the border of Portugal, about 3 hours south of Madrid, southwest of Madrid, about 2.5 hours north of Seville, 3 hours east of Lisbon. Tiny little remote village in the middle of nowhere. I know, it's heaven. It's heaven. I'm in the heart of nature. And this is, I didn't plan to be here. I just sort of flow here with the course of my life. And flow is another important key life skill that we were not taught. And I think a whole other conversation. And I want to have you back as a guest because
there's a few rabbit holes that we could easily go down.
Yeah.
And we could even start with this truth, love, and flow. I think that's spot on. Unfortunately, we are many people are in a. I think they feel like they're in a battle zone, with all of those other factors in front of them. I call them lenses through which we see life. Right.
So yeah, I see the same thing.
So it's like if you've got all these opaque lenses in front of you. The love and the truth can't be seen and the flow can't happen. But I completely agree with you. I've lived it on my skin of that flow and how that works and how a vision board, as crazy as it sounds, comes true. Yeah, right.
I am my own vision board. I
see that.
My tattoo story on my skin literally tells my story of flow. And, you know, there are many.
I've got mine over there.
Vision really boards are great tools.
They're great tools, right? Because for me anyway, it's like that thing that I said before. It's like you have to put up this wall of protection.
Yes.
And not a wall, not a mask, right? So it's not about living in lack of authenticity. It's protective force, right? It's your blue bell of what the archangel energy, right? It's like that stuff's not coming in. And because we are bombarded in the society that we're in today, the idea of a vision board that you can focus on for some time during the day is really helpful to clear that clutter.
Yeah.
To the truth and love and flow that you're talking about.
A guy wire is a tensioned cable that is designed to enhance the stability of a freestanding structure. Think of me as your guy wire. In terms of life skills mentoring, you're perfectly capable of standing stably on your own two feet. But I'm a cable that can enhance your stability. I'm available for individual or couples counseling, life skills mentorship, child loss grief support, LGBTQ+ support. I can also officiate weddings, end of life ceremonies, baby namings, invocations, or whatever guidance you may need. I serve all genders, all ages. Sessions are affordable, discreet, private, and conducted online. Find me at guy-wire.org. Book your appointment today.
Because
I see it as the same as a tree builds bark around itself to protect its inner core. I call it building your bark. And we
love that.
Part of nature. Yeah, you can use that.
I'm going to use.
Give me credit. But
building your brand.
It's important as a reflection that we share roughly on average 60% of our DNA with the plant kingdom. We are nature. We're not separate from it. We don't lord over nature. Nature does not need human beings. In fact, it's proven to be the opposite. We need certainly. Nature. And so to equate ourselves with the unfolding of a tree, right? If we see ourselves as a tree that's rooted in the earth, right? And gets its life force from the sun, which we need.
Yes.
Right. But we also, a tree is faced with all of these attacks from bugs and beetles to pollution to other, you know, rains,
winds, and wind, hurricanes, whatever. Yeah.
It builds a bark around itself to protect its vital essence, its core, where all the juice is flowing. We are different. We are no different. And what a vision board does, unlike things like The Secret, you know, which a lot of people know about, the book The Secret. Which I watched the video version of it, and I was stricken by this whole idea of the law of attraction. And I didn't like it because it was all about the material. You were talking about in your journey. You've been through that, right?
Yeah. And I think that what gets forgotten in the law of attraction conversation is before you begin to throw, you know, Porsches and Lamborghinis up on the wall, you need to do the work of understanding the essence of who you are and what is your purpose and what, you know, because otherwise the vision board will, you know, inevitably be, like you said, sort of a bunch of trinkets.
And that's what a lot of people use it for. They get the house and the car and the bank account.
Yeah. So I love the law of attraction. It works very well, but often under sort of that 2 centimeters of positivity is a vat of negativity that hasn't been dealt with.
Right.
Right.
And materialism.
You know, exactly. So if you have, you know, materialism and childhood stuff and trauma, big T, small T, all this stuff, and you say, oh, I'm going to do a vision board and, you know, plunk it up there, you've got to do the work on the fuel tank first before you do the surface level thing. So I agree with you about the law of attraction. I think it works brilliantly. It's just like, make sure you're focusing that light where you want it to go, right?
And on the deeper layers
because
self with a capital S, self, that self-awareness, self-understanding, even over the oracle at Delphi, right? What did it say over the cave? Know thyself. That is such an ancient, simple starting point for everybody who's on this human physical journey. The thing that did stick out to me about The Secret that I really resonated with was the idea of the allegory of the genie of the lamp. You remember this?
I don't remember that.
Okay, so Aladdin rubs the lamp and out pops the genie, right? And the genie folds its arms and says, what?
I can't remember. Tap
into that inner child. Where's little Colin? I want to talk to him.
Oh boy, I have no idea. We didn't have televisions and stuff like that when I was a kid. So, but and I don't even remember. No, tell me. You got to tell me. Sorry.
Most people say that the genie says, "I will grant you 3 wishes."
Oh right, yeah.
Okay, does that bring you back? Yeah. But that is wrong. That is absolutely wrong. When you go back to the original text in 1001 Arabian Nights, which I think everybody should read. The genie comes out of the lamp and says, your wish is my command. And if the genie represents our higher self, our connection to everything possible in the universe, guess what? There are no limitations. Your wish is my command. There are no 3 wishes. That's what we've been taught in a way to limit what is possible. And I think that if we open back up to the connection we have to the oneness, to the everything, to the power that we imbue into what we call God or the creator, right? Yep. The power of creation, the power of destruction. If we recognize that every world religion says in one degree or another that we humans are created in God's image, right? We are a reflection of the divine. Well, we're imbued with all the same qualities that we put onto that divine being. So doesn't that mean that what? I mean that we're the same, right? So and that comes back to the individual responsibility to know thyself and to reflect love and truth.
I think you're totally right. That's why I think that you know, if you think about vision boards or law of attraction and that vat of negativity that can sit just below the surface, that's the part that you need to cleanse and clean out and exercise to get to the truth and love and flow, right?
That's right.
But it doesn't have to take a lifetime, right? It just you can get there. You can get there quickly. By shedding all of that other stuff.
Hey, are you like me, always looking for ways to make a positive impact in the world? Well then join me in sponsoring Desire Child Care Organization. We are a legally incorporated, fully volunteer-based organization in Uganda, committed to providing essential needs, holistic arts-based education, and a safe family environment to 33 vulnerable children ages 2 to 14. Your monthly sponsorship can help improve the lives of these kids toward a better future. Desire Child Care is different from any other charity I know because, well, we have zero administrative overhead. Every penny goes to the kids. And we have a plan toward self-sufficiency through agriculture. So support is temporary. It's kind of like a leg up. Visit desirechildcare.org to learn more and get involved. Let's empower and inspire the Desire Kids together. Thanks. Yeah, keep an image of the genie or the lamp on your vision board.
Yeah, I like that. I'm gonna
put it up at the top because that's the highest self. That's the highest achievement, is that everything is possible. Okay, so listen, this has been a very validating.
You're right. That's what I think. That if you clean the fuel tank, right, you really go to limitless possibilities.
Yeah.
It's like freedom, right?
It's magic. It is utter magic. Not Harry Potter magic, but real human nature. Mm-hmm. Universal magic that we all possess, but we need to get back to that. So listen, I can't believe it's already been an hour. This has been so gratifying and validating, and I feel like I've known you forever, which we probably have. So let's wrap this up with your question for the next co-host.
Oh, I forgot that I had homework, didn't I? I suppose my question would be, and what are you doing to make the most impact in this world?
Well, that's the question I asked you. You got to come up with a different one.
No, come on. I thought that was.
I'm going to push you.
yeah, that's fine. You can totally push me.
But that's a really important question, I think, that we all need to answer for ourselves is what are we doing with our passion and with our...
Well, there's an interesting question that I've been debating to myself recently.
Perfect.
And so the question is, what is the difference between your purpose and your passion? And what do you think you should really be following? So that would be my question to the next guy, girl, whoever it is. I have a thing in my head that I'm trying to figure out to answer that question. So I won't do it. I'll listen to the episode. But I think they're two very different things.
Yes.
And I think I know the answer.
So tell me your answer.
I think we should really follow our purpose as opposed to our passion. Because I think, you know, you might, I don't know, be passionate about Formula One sports cars, right? Okay, great. But is that your purpose? Is that how you're going to truly impact the world? So I think, you know, you can have passions that are all sorts of things. I don't know. You could collect tortoises. Doesn't matter, right? Is that impacting the world? Are you bringing your full self to, are you truly showing up if it's just your passion and not your purpose? So that's the question that I've had in my head, you know.
May I answer that question?
Sure, of course. Yeah.
I believe that they are different, and yet they both define your calling, your vocation, right? The voca. People think vocation as like, you know, mechanical engineer, whatever.
Sure.
No, your vocation is the thing that calls to you and the thing that calls from you. It's when that deep passion in your soul meets a great need in the world. That's your calling. That is your vocation. So I don't think it's binary. I don't think it's
a mutually
exclusive, you know, one or the other. It's where they merge. It's the
interesting.
It's
okay.
the liminal space. It's the space between spaces where your passion and your purpose
meet. I see. And, I see. That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way. Very cool. So let's see what your next guest answers.
And let's see what you do with it, because you're already achieved so many great things, and your book is coming out when?
Oh, it'll be next year. It'll be next year, because I started to really do podcasting also to really tease out the concepts and the ideas and get and dive deeper myself. So that's why I'm doing that. And but it'll come out next year. Yeah.
Well, I will look forward to getting it. And I will put a link to your website in the description of the podcast so people can find you. And I do hope we will stay in touch, because
absolutely.
A brother.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This was great fun.
Great. So well,
thank you.
Thank you so much. All the best.
You too.
You've been listening to season 4 of the Lost Traveler podcast with Henry Cameron Allen. Visit me online at henryallen.org. Thank you to my guests, and thank you for tuning in. Let's keep striving for a better world together.